Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. The Three Martini Lunch is brought to you today by ZipRecruiter. Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More from the good folks at ZipRecruiter later on in the podcast. Jim, let's start with the good martini, and it's almost like the Democrats were listening to you yesterday when you talked about the need to stoke fighting and division and rancor inside the Democratic Party. But as Politico reminds us today, it's actually been going on for quite a while, ever since the primary. This is courtesy of Gabrielle De Benedetti. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. The Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders rift is bubbling up in gubernatorial primaries. It's pulsing through the race for Democratic National Committee chairman and shaping state party leadership contests from Hawaii to Maine. Long after the Democratic presidential nomination was settled, the bruising 2016 primary fight continues to divide the party, hindering Democrats' ability to unite and prompting national party leaders to tiptoe around the issue in the hopes of avoiding an outbreak of Sanders-Clinton proxy wars. The bitter defeat at the hands of Donald Trump has exacerbated the tensions, leading to the rise of, quote, Bernie would have won, and, quote, Bernie's challenge helped sink Hillary camps, even if the battles are rarely framed in such explicit terms. Now, with the chairmanship of the DNC and party nominations in multiple 2017 races at stake, some Democrats are desperately trying to strike a balance and remind rank-and-file activists of the real enemy, Howard Dean among them, who has pulled out of the race for Democratic chairman. So, Jim, Bernie Sanders may have contributed more to conservatism than he realizes, and certainly far more than he intended.
Indeed, Greg. And, you know, we had called for this yesterday. Clearly, everyone should listen to the Three Martini Lunch because we demand it and the Democrats obey. I am just flush with power right now. You know what I'm kind of struck by is that there's a part of me that looks and says, obviously, look, this is good for the right. It's good for Republicans if Democrats are infighting. I almost feel like, no, actually, this probably is a fight worth having for the Democrats. That in a way, like, there are times where you feel like it's a fight that's more about the surface, more about images of the party. But I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say, look, there were really big, concrete policy differences between Sanders and Clinton. And I suspect that they were not just, you know, people who wanted to have the first woman president versus the people who wanted a president who looked and sounded like Larry David. I think there was there's a real split in the party about what they should stand for. And clearly, you know, I'm not a huge fan of either one of them. I think that the Sanders folks are more dangerous for the party with their more or less open embrace of socialism than the Clinton wing is. On the other hand, I think the Sanders wing is more honest. Doesn't pretend to... it's one part is openly socialist, the other part is semi-secretly. But I think this is, you know, this isn't such a bad thing to have. Yes, you have these fights in primaries, but clearly it sounds like the wounds haven't just healed. And I don't think it's a matter of one side being nasty to the other. I think there's a real clear difference about what the purpose of government is, that the Clinton folks believe that it's sort of the Obama era with some tweaks and some nudges and some slight adjustment. And the Sanders folks want something that's really different. They want free college education. They want, you know, free childcare. They want cradle-to-grave health insurance paid for by the state. This is a very different, you know, image of what the American government is supposed to do. There's a part of me that says, no, this is what parties are supposed to have these fights about. I also noticed, Greg, you've got, you know, Perez, the former labor secretary. You've got Keith Ellison, the congressman. What I find really interesting, there's another candidate who jumped in there. I'm probably mispronouncing his name. J.Mu Green, who's a former Fox News analyst.
Yeah, I remember that name.
Now, no offense to Ms. Green, although I can certainly understand why, considering how the last person with the last name Green was Alvin Green for the Democrats. Maybe they're just going to instinctively flinch when they hear that. Look, so you can jump from being a Fox News commentator to the head of the party? Really? I mean, I guess maybe Michael Steele would be the most, you know, equivalent movement on the right side in the Republican Party. A lot of Republicans are left back to the Michael Steele era at the RNC with not fond memories, a sense of the National Party being kind of incoherent and divided and not using its resources wisely and running into a ton of debt. That for whatever you think of Reince Priebus, he certainly got the National Party out of that. But I guess they'll just take anybody. I guess, you know, Greg, should you or I throw our hat in the ring for DNC chair? I mean, the fact that we're not Democrats is probably a clear obstacle against us. But usually if you want to run the national party, it helps to have run a state party or have done something to deal with, you know, some experience in the organizational part of the job. But no, apparently not. You just got to be on TV, huh?
Jim, as long as you're going to throw your influence around and get the Democrats to fight over things, I think you'd be a fabulous candidate. Who would do more damage to the Democrats from the highest position inside the party?
Maybe Howard Dean? I shouldn't say that. Since actually he had a really good cycle when he was running the DNC. But
yeah, some of the politics worked well with him. I think he was in charge in both 06 and 08. Is the Sanders move really, and the growth of his movement really, a big part of Obama's legacy here? Because obviously Obama gave the middle finger to working America, and that fueled the rise of Sanders and the rise of Trump, but also his big government approach to the government running things. And now the more and more people think that that's the government's job to run more and more of our lives and our economy. And it seems like maybe the fact that that sounds appealing to way more people than it used to could be part of his legacy as well.
Maybe we haven't given Obama enough credit. Fundamental change is coming, he promised. And I guess you could say, yes, that's a pretty fundamental change.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the Obama legacy. You see those graphics where you see how many House seats and Senate seats and 1,000 state legislature seats have changed hands to the Republicans since he took office in 2009. But good times, good times. As long as the Democrats keep fighting, they're distracted, and that's good. All right, on to the bad martini now, and on to Donald Trump. This is courtesy of Reuters. Germany's foreign minister said on Monday that U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's comments that NATO was obsolete had aroused concern across the 28-member alliance. Frank-Walter Steinmeier, speaking after a meeting with Alliance Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in Brussels, said Trump's remarks contradicted views expressed by designated Defense Secretary James Mattis. He also spoke of amazement. Obviously, the comments from President-elect Trump that he views NATO as obsolete were viewed with anxiety, he said. Trump, who was due to be sworn in as president on Friday, said NATO was obsolete because it had not defended against terrorist attacks. He also said he had always had great respect for German Chancellor Angela Merkel, but criticized her 2015 decision to allow in a wave of a million migrants as a catastrophic mistake that opened the door to terrorist attacks. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said it was inappropriate for Trump to wade directly into the politics of another country by his remarks, because John Kerry's never done that, or his boss. So, Jim, I think it's a matter of a couple things here. First of all, Trump once again speaks inartfully. He later clarified that he has respect for NATO. He thinks it has a purpose. It's just kind of lost its mooring in the same thing that we've heard quite a few different times from him, that members haven't paid enough into the security aspect of this. So it seems to be, in some ways, getting overblown what he actually meant here. On the other hand, it goes back to what Kellyanne Conway said a week or so ago, that you can't really go by what Trump says. You got to go by what's in his heart, which is a little harder to hear.
It is. Maybe he's going to lower the microphone. You know, we should give credit where it's due here. The full context of Trump's remarks aren't nearly as scary as the headline. I have the transcript here in front of me, and it says, I said a long time ago that NATO had problems. Number one, it was obsolete because it was, you know, designed many, many years ago. Number, you know, by the way, so was the Constitution. Right? Like, just because something was created a long time ago, I don't mind. But anyway, continuing the Trump quote. Number two, the countries aren't paying what they're supposed to pay. I took such heat when I said NATO was obsolete. It's obsolete because it wasn't taking care of terror. I took a lot of heat for 2 days. And then they started saying Trump is right. And now it was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. They have a whole division devoted now to terror, which is good. So he's acknowledging this. I don't know about you, Greg. I would say the entire NATO effort in Afghanistan counts as an effort against terror. But maybe you can define – some folks will define that a little differently. But then here's the third part, which is, I think, you know, deserved probably as much attention as his use of the word obsolete. Quote, and the other thing is the countries aren't paying their fair share, so we're supposed to protect countries, but a lot of these countries aren't paying what they're supposed to be paying, which I think is very unfair to the United States. With that being said, NATO is very important to me. Now, this is a perfectly legitimate gripe from the United States to our NATO partners. Right now, about five countries, NATO asks its members to spend 2% of their GDP on military spending to support the alliance, a certain amount of military self-sufficiency. The U.S. is spending something like 5-some percent And a bunch of them are in that, you know, 1.7. Germany, I think, is like half of what they're supposed to be doing. We have a right to say, hey, you can't expect us to carry all the weight here. We expect you guys to be a little more self-sufficient. And yes, we know you guys love all your social spending and you have lots of other things you want to spend money on, but spending for common defense is necessary. It's one of the things that makes this alliance work. We don't want freeloaders. We don't want free riders. Now, I wish Trump would stop using the word obsolete, because there's two things you can do with something that's obsolete. You can toss it out because you're selling horse and buggy whips in the era of you know, automobiles. Or, you know, or like when you have old software, Greg, what do?
You update it.
You update it, right? You upgrade it. You make the appropriate changes for changing times. And I think this is something that very few people in America's defense community and national security community would disagree with: upgrading NATO, with updating NATO, expecting a little more input from our allies and things like that. But we wouldn't want to scrap it. And when Trump keeps using the word obsolete, clearly Trump doesn't care what anybody says about him or what anybody thinks about him. But if, you know, if people think you're a Putin stooge, stop criticizing the European alliance that is a major bulwark against Russian expansion, right? You know, every time Trump uses the word obsolete, everybody in the Balkans gets jumpy. The Baltic states gets jumpy. And so if he was just a little more careful with his words, he'd avoid a lot of these problems in this controversy. But he's not interested. And it sounds like every couple of days in the Trump administration, we're going to have to reassure our NATO allies that, no, we're not pulling out any day now. When he says obsolete, he's just complaining about it, and he wants us to make some very reasonable changes.
This reminds me a lot of the story in the campaign when Trump was on the campaign trail accusing Obama of inventing ISIS, and then he goes on Hugh Hewitt, and Hewitt says, I know what you meant. Obama created the vacuum by pulling out and not leaving a residual force, which allowed this movement to grow. And Trump says, no, he invented it.
Yeah, I don't need that life preserver. No, throw me the anvil, all right? You know.
Oh, Jim, so maybe Trump needs to hire somebody to help translate, as you were saying just a moment ago, because he has a hard time sometimes deciding what words to use and using the proper words. Not sure who that wordsmith would be, but are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place simply isn't enough to find the quality candidates. If you want the perfect hire, you've got to post your job on all of the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click.
You can find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by more than 1 million businesses.
And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And so, Jim, a lot of people, of course, think it's crazy that Trump is using words like obsolete for NATO and other tactics that he uses from time to time. We certainly agree with those head-scratching moments. But when you really want truly crazy, and even in some cases dangerously crazy, you almost exclusively go to the left. And that's what Project Veritas is exposing this week. They're promising a series of videos. We've only seen the first one so far. And it's about this movement called Disrupt J20, which I assume stands for January 20th. The idea here is to disrupt one of the Trump inaugural balls to be held at the National Press Club. The undercover reporter here is speaking with three different activists at the now infamous Comet Ping Pong Pizza Shop in Northwest Washington, D.C. And here's some of that conversation. There's background noise, so some of it might be a little hard to make out.
Yeah, you had a freaking pint of butyric acid. I don't care how big the building is, it's closed. It has to stay enclosed for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And this stuff is, like, it's very efficient. It's very, very smelly. It lasts a long time. And a little of it goes a long way. I know, I'm trying to think through how to get all the sprinkles throughout the board. There's usually a piece of, like, fusible metal or a piece of glass or liquid in it that'll blow.
That's pretty hard to hear. So in case you missed a big chunk of that, here's James O'Keefe explaining what's going on.
This is undercover video of potential criminal acts being planned. These organizers and activists are talking about setting off butyric acid into the ventilation system and setting off fire alarm sprinklers at a Trump inaugural ball later this week.
Jim, the only surprise is that Bill Ayers wasn't part of this conversation.
I'm sure he'd be like, you amateurs. Stink bombs. These kids today. Yeah, so here's the thing. If you're going to call yourself the anti-fascist coalition and your motive or your means of achieving your goal is to threaten people and to use dangerous chemicals that can be noxious, that can cause, you know, visceral, you know, puking and terrible gagging reactions and stuff, well, then you're not as anti-fascist as you think you are. In fact, look in the mirror. I just spotted one right there. I'm pretty sure that if I were at the Deplora Ball, I would not have a good time. I'm not particularly fond of the people who eagerly embrace that label. There are some really repugnant individuals who've adopted that and seem to be involved with this. But you know what? There are Americans who have the same constitutional rights as you and I. One of those rights is to peaceably assemble. Meaning if the worst people in the world want to get together and throw an inaugural ball, they're allowed to do that. And it doesn't matter, anti-fascist coalition, if you don't like them or you think they're terrible people. They're free to do that. And the moment you go there trying to disrupt things, you become the bad guy. You become the fascist. You're interfering with their rights. And so I'm kind of left not surprised by this. Then the next spin, saw this over in Washingtonian, Greg, is that the anti-fascist coalition says they knew he was a James O'Keefe guy all along. They knew there was that, so they just acted that way in front of the cameras in order to fool him, to play with him. They knew he was recording all along. They would never throw stink bombs at people, but they just said that stuff in order to prove that they would never do something like that. To quote Dr. Evil, right. I don't buy that. You know what I think? Let's picture, Greg, you and I get together with folks, you know, the folks from Ricochet, and they say, hey, you know, we're really upset by what Harry Reid's gone. We don't have to worry about him anymore. You know, somebody who really drives us crazy. And they said, hey, let's throw a stink bomb into that Democratic lawmaker's office. Greg, you and I would say, what is wrong with you? Hell no, that's not, you know, that's not what we do. We are not a terrorist group. This is not Mission Impossible, right? You know, we beat these people by through the public argument. But they didn't react that way, right? Everybody around the table is like, yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, yeah. I think indicates something about how ultimately they're deep down, they believe that the end justifies the means, right? And they're gleeful about it. They're excited about it. They're enthusiastic about it. They can't wait to see people coughing and gagging and running away from the stink bomb. So when you really get off on the idea of hurting other people for thinking differently than you, I'm trying to think of a good word to describe that, Greg, when you're really that committed to oppressing the rights of – oh, I know the word is fascism. You have stared into the abyss. The abyss has stared back and you have become everything you proclaim to oppose. And then afterwards you have to say, oh no, we totally meant to do that. We were totally joking. That's why we bought the tickets to the Deplora Ball. And you know, like, here's the other thing. It's like, you know, when you use the term like quick, Greg, how do you put together a stink bomb? Does everybody just kind of know the chemicals you need to put together to make a stink bomb? The thing is that you put food in the back of the fridge and maybe that would be, you know, bad enough for a while. So it just seems really weird. You'd have this information at your fingertips. This seems, That just kind of seems like a red flag to myself. So kudos, James O'Keefe, another guy got caught. Kind of to continue our theme of the week, Greg, I would just say to any Democrat, either at the DNC meetings or any other gathering from here on out for the next 4 years, the odds are more than 50% that the person next to you is secretly recording you for James O'Keefe.
Oh, maybe this will be the plot line for 24 Legacy, trying to stop a stink bomb at the inauguration.
I happen to notice that the other great or sometimes great spy show, Homeland, on Showtime, I don't know if you saw the premiere, Greg, but it's all about taking place the period in between the election and the inauguration. The woman Democratic senator from New York, who's regarded warily by the national security community. Greg, you think the producers kind of missed on that one? Started filming maybe 6 months ago, thought something was going to feel really realistic and resonant, and we'll see if it gets better.
In the words of Rick Perry, oops. Well, Democrats don't disappoint. Their insanity at the professional level and at the radical level seems to know no bounds. We'll see what they unfold for us tomorrow, since they clearly listen to you, Jim. So your encouragement, I'm sure, will be acted on.
We don't report. We decide. Report and decide.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And remember, folks, right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.